are losing hundreds of millions of dollars a month. That, I would advance to you, is a third world resource extraction model.
Lawmakers look at a new system for taxing oil and gas. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 14th of April. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Senator Mark Begich wants military families to benefit from the health care overhaul.
I had received some calls and said, do we get that coverage? They're very excited about it. And we had to explain that we kept the military out of this discussion.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
North Rim Bank, reminding you that you have a second chance to help other Alaskans. If you filed for your PFD online, you can safely donate a portion of your dividend to your favorite Alaska cause. Log into the PFD website and pick, click, give. AT&T, your world delivered. Details at www.att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266.
And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The House today took its first serious look at the Senate bill that would separate the state's oil and gas taxes. Senate Finance Co-Chair Sitka Republican Bert Stedman recapped for the House finance members how the current oil and gas tax structure developed over the years. He said that because of tax breaks and the progressive nature of the tax, the structure will lead to a potential risk to state revenue when possible gas producers begin to use a large diameter gas line from the North Slope to Canada. Stedman puts the possible loss somewhere between $2 and $3 billion per year under current market prices. In previous testimony in other committees, the Parnell administration has said the tax break is in place as an incentive. Stedman disagrees.
I would argue that this is not an incentive. It's a giveaway. And it's not an incentive. It's a petrol shell game being played on the state of Alaska to a magnitude that is just staggering. In fact, it's to a magnitude that most people don't even believe the numbers. They're huge. They're in billions.
Fairbanks Democrat Joe Pascavan says he came around to Stedman's view of the need to separate the two taxes. He says the risk is 100% of the production tax, 100% of the royalty, and reducing oil revenue to cover the loss.
We are losing hundreds of millions of dollars a month. That, I would advance to you, is a third world resource extraction model where we are paying while our resource leaves the state. I would submit that by decoupling, there is absolutely no increase in oil tax.
Committee members reflecting comments from other House members who didn't follow the issue as the Senate dealt with it say they have only a few days to comprehend a subject that others have had for lengthy hearings and debates. Chairman Mike Hawker says he is prepared to meet until the early morning hours if necessary. He anticipates a major amendment tomorrow with floor action this weekend. The president may have signed a massive Democratic-sponsored health care bill into law last month, but Alaska Senator Mark Begich says Congress must also address the health care needs of military families. He introduced a bill today that would extend insurance benefits to children of military families up to age 26. Children of active duty and retired military are currently covered by the TRICARE insurance program until age 21 or 23 if they're full-time students. But the health care bill signed into law last month lets adult children stay on their civilian parents' insurance longer, until age 26, and Begich says military families should have the same coverage. He says the TRICARE military health insurance plan was separated out of the bigger health care bill, and now military families want to know how the benefits can extend to them.
Had received some calls and said, do we get that coverage? They're very excited about it. And we had to explain that we kept the military out of this discussion. But it seems such a good benefit for families to have that, especially our military families, active and retired, that we thought it was a good move to move forward and making sure they're covered.
Begich is a co-sponsor of the TRICARE Dependent Coverage Extension Act, which is also being introduced by a Democrat in the House. If it passes, it will bump up the age of kids covered to 26 starting on October 1st. Begich was in Alaska over the recent spring recess and says he had a lot of discussions with constituents about the health care bill. He says few people realize that the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office says it will reduce the deficit over the next decade. Republicans, including Senator Lisa Murkowski, say they think the CBO numbers are skewed and that the health care bill will cost more than estimated. But Begich says the numbers add up to savings.
Actually, it's intriguing to watch people's reactions because their reaction is, well, I didn't realize that. You know, I thought it was, and they fill in the blank. And then when you say it's not me saying how much it's going to reduce the deficit, it's an independent agency. Suddenly people, you know, they have issues around healthcare, but they like that component. It's almost like if they could just have that, they'll take that. But I think that's a big piece. It's one reason why I supported the legislation.
Begich says the TRICARE bill is one in a series of steps he'd like to see to improve conditions for military families. He says far more servicemen and women have dependents than they did 40 years ago. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a runaway is among four street people found dead in Anchorage.
There was no indication that she was anything but intentionally missing from her home.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Volunteer firefighting is a rewarding and extraordinary way to serve your community. It takes dedication, sacrifice, leadership, as well as mental and physical stamina. Emergency calls throughout Alaska continue to rise, but the number of volunteer firefighters continues to decline. Learn how you can experience the excitement and satisfaction of becoming a volunteer firefighter. Visit asfafireline.org. This message is sponsored by the Alaska State Firefighters Association.
Two federal deadlines are this week. Tomorrow is, of course, the tax filing deadline, and Friday is the deadline to mail in your census forms. Currently, Alaska is at the very bottom of the list for participation. Ruben Duvalier is with the U.S. Census. He says Alaska is currently at 57% participation compared to Wisconsin, highest in the nation at 77%.
And the national average of 67%. Alaska is 10% behind that.
Duvalier says geographic weather and mail delivery challenges are some of the known factors that cause Alaskans to lag behind. Trends were similar for the 2000 census. But he encourages people to get the forms in, and he also throws down a challenge.
We hope that Alaska will come up from being, last place in the nation. We're just 1 point behind New Mexico. So a little bit more promptness in mailing before the deadline will help Alaska to be not last in the nation.
The rates vary quite a bit around the state. Juneau is trending with the national average at 67%. Anchorage rates are 65%. Fairbanks is at 55%. Dillingham is at 45%. And Barrow, 32%. Matt Nuska, Susitna Borough officials are urging borough residents to respond to the census questionnaire. According to borough sources, the Mat-Su population has grown 42% in the decade since the 2000 census. The Kinnick-Fairview area is, in particular, has almost achieved 100% growth in the past 10 years. Borough Manager John Duffy is asking residents to fill out and return census forms they receive in the mail.
It is critical that people fill out this form. This information is used to determine the number of state representative seats, state senator seats. We've had a lot of growth in a borough. We have all of the challenges related to growth, the need for more roads, need for more schools. The way this works is that revenue sharing from the state, grants, and other programs from the federal government are based on population. And therefore, we need people to fill out those forms so that there's an accurate count out here.
Duffy says the census count could result in gains for the Matanuska Valley communities. Growth and shifts in population could result in another state representative or legislative districts could be redrawn. Billions of dollars in federal funds are linked to population as well. Duffy says if borough population is undercounted, the damage will take a decade to fix, and all of the federal tax dollars submitted every April 15th will go to other communities.
Each year, the Borough Assembly, for the past several years, has been reducing a property tax rate because we have gotten revenue sharing from the state of Alaska. If we do not have the appropriate counts, we'll get less revenue sharing, and that means the tax bill will not be reduced as much. Or, stated another way, it could increase because we get fewer revenue sharing dollars.
Duffy says people who did not receive census forms can contact MATSU census offices to get them. This week, more U.S. Census forms will arrive in the mail for residents who did not return theirs. Beginning in May, census takers will knock on doors for residents who did not return a form that was left at the door. A man's body was discovered in an Anchorage ballpark dugout on Tuesday, bringing to 4 the number of bodies found on city streets this year. The spate of outdoor deaths among the city's street population has highlighted urgent efforts to find a solution to the homeless problem in Anchorage. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports.
17-year-old Charlene Shugak was found dead in an Anchorage park on Monday. Hers was the third body to be discovered in city public places in as many weeks. Anchorage police say the girl had been reported missing by her mother earlier this month. Shugak was found lying face down near a ballpark fence. Authorities are waiting for toxicology test results, as an autopsy shows no indication of physical causes for her death. APD spokesman Lieutenant Dave Parker.
There was no indication that she was anything but intentionally missing from her home.
Shugak was not homeless. Police describe her as a runaway. The West High School junior had recently dropped out of school. A yearbook photo of Shugak shows a dark-haired young girl staring past the camera, unsmiling, feigning a bored look that fails to hide her dimples. Two other people met their deaths on Anchorage streets since late March. A woman, 53-year-old Florence Clark, was found in a downtown park surrounded by empty liquor bottles, her death attributed to alcohol and exposure. Days later, a homeless man crawled into a shopping mall dumpster and was crushed to death when a trash compactor went into play. Paul Brown was 55 years old. He lived on the streets, police say. The fourth victim, discovered on Tuesday, was found in a baseball team dugout. Anchorage police have yet to publicly identify him, although they do know his address. The man, around 30 years old, was found with an empty half-gallon jug of liquor beside him. He was discovered by baseball team officials making a spring check on Mulcahy Stadium ball field.
We're investigating them, obviously, each one individually. That's important because there's no common thread other than the individuals have all passed away outdoors.
Diane Engel heads Anchorage's homeless leadership team. Engel is also director of the city's Health and Human Services Department. She says team members and police officers are attempting to reach the city's homeless population at shelters where they gather.
We've been working on cold weather policies. Just in response to the recent deaths, we'll be going to Bean's Cafe and getting, you know, some information out to residents there about hypothermia, why this is a dangerous time of the year, especially dangerous time because the daytime can be so deceptively nice, and then in the evening it gets much colder. People aren't prepared.
Engel says there is no easy solution to the problem of homelessness.
Anytime a person dies on the street, it's a very unfortunate and tragic event. I think this happens all over the country, but I think that Anchorage is trying to be a leader in moving forward and protecting all of our citizens, even our most vulnerable.
The latest victim found this year brings to 18 the number of homeless found dead on city streets since May of 2009. Police spokesman Parker says the deaths are not related, but all of them are tied to a lifestyle that is not healthy.
Last year, the common thread was, except in one case, I believe, there was the alcohol involved and the street lifestyle. And, of course, we understand that's not conducive to good health and long life. It's just the way it is. The homeless issue is much larger than just these particular deaths, however. This is simply indicative of a larger problem.
Just as geese were returning and green grass was making a spring comeback, an unexpected April blizzard has wrapped Anchorage in a soggy blanket of wet snow, adding another hazard to life on the streets. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Anchorage police have just released the name of the deceased man found in the dugout of the Mulcahy Stadium baseball field. Police say the man found Tuesday was 27-year-old Michael Jenkins Jr. of Anchorage. A day after a spring storm dumped several inches of fresh snow across south central Alaska, Department of Public Safety Commissioner Joseph Masters has extended the studded tire deadline for drivers on the southern Kenai Peninsula to May 1st. KBBI's Aaron Selbig has more.
Normally, residents in communities south of 60 degrees north latitude, including Anchor Point, Homer, Kodiak, and much of southeast Alaska, must have their studded tires off by April 15th, which is Thursday. Alaska State Trooper Information Officer Beth Ibsen says her boss was hearing plenty of complaints as the Thursday deadline approached.
The commissioner's in Juneau right now, and legislators were hearing from their constituents, and we had enough people saying that the road conditions were not good, that we still were experiencing winter weather. It's still winter. The road conditions have not changed significantly. There's still a hazard on the roads, so that's why.
This is the third year in a row that troopers have extended the deadline, says Ibsen. According to the Alaska statute that covers studded tires, individual drivers have only one other means to legally skirt the rules, applying for a special individual traction permit, the fee for which is one-third of the vehicle's registration fee. Department of Transportation spokesperson Roger Wetherell says the studded tire rules are there for a reason.
You know, we look at it from a standpoint of what studs do to the roads when the roads are clear, and that's a deterioration of the surfacing. We just, you know, want to remind people to take those studded tires off before the deadline.
Motorists in communities north of 60 degrees north latitude, including the central Kenai Peninsula, Anchorage, and the Matsu Valley, have until May 1st to change their tires over or face a $50 fine for each tire. In Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. The Association of Alaska School Boards, working with school districts statewide to bring innovation to classrooms through digital learning for the 21st century. Information at aasb.org. And by BP, unlocking Alaska's resource potential.
U.S. Representative Don Young was in Wrangell today as part of his trip through southeast Alaska this week. The Alaska Republican touched on the possibility of an Alaska-British Columbia electrical intertie. Wrangell has been pushing the project for more than a year. KSTK's Tony Gorman reports.
Congressman Young spent most of Wednesday meeting with the Wrangell Assembly about local projects that could be put before Congress. As the Alaska Republican was filling out a U.S. Census form at City Hall, he commended the Assembly for their work in prioritizing its projects.
They got more than what they submitted to me. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And, of course, my job is to follow the wishes of the Assembly. And number one is a hospital, improvement of the hospital.
Along with the new Wrangell Medical Center and the top five on the list were hydropower projects. Young says he'll continue to throw his support for hydropower because he believes it's the key to southeast Alaska.
There should be no burning of any diesel fuel at any one time. There should be an abundance of hydropower, so you have that availability not only for I call domicile use, but for the potential ability to have added value products and the raw resources, and even if you have enough power, you can take and develop an economy in southeast Alaska.
One project that Young has long supported is a proposed Alaska-British Columbia intertie. Wrangell spent the better part of last year gaining support for the project that would require the construction of a power line along the Bradfield Corridor that would go to the U.S.-Canadian border. The line would then have to extend another 60 miles to reach another proposed line, the Northwest Transmission Line along Highway 37. Young says he thinks that selling the energy is one of the ways of funding the project. He also disagreed with some who think it's cheaper to buy fuel and other forms of energy from BC.
The problem with that, if you buy it, you are also sending dollars out. You're not keeping dollars in or creating new dollars. So I would prefer to produce the power to sell it to help pay for the project, and then as you pay for it, over a period of time, though, you can get out of that contract.
Young says getting the project to President Obama's desk won't be an easy task. He says, like the other 434 representatives in the House, he will continue to fight for funding for small communities. Reporting from Wrangell, I'm Tony Gorman.
Renowned polar explorer Will Steger made the first documented unsupported sled dog trip to the North Pole in 1986. He is the author of Over the Top of the World and other books and has become a passionate advocate for taking measures to deal with the warming climate. He has turned his attention to youth with his Will Steger Foundation and his Eyewitness to Climate Change tour, which was in Anchorage yesterday and will be in Fairbanks today and tomorrow. He says young people are engaged, connected, and they vote.
They understand the science. They take it automatically because they were raised with the science and they understand what's going on. And they have the ability to organize. So it's this galvanized youth and this galvanized vote in the future that we, I think we can always depend on in climate change. We took our audience to the what we call the front lines of global warming through the expeditions and the internet. You can bring to people like right where the ice is breaking off, right where the ice shelves are breaking. We're looking at it. We bring that real time into the classrooms and into the average person on the street.
There was a poll recently regarding Americans' attitudes about climate change. And the results showed that there was a higher level of concern more than a decade ago than there is now. People appear to be less concerned rather than more. Why do you think that is? What's going on there? And what are you hearing from people as you travel around and talk about climate change?
Yeah, it's discouraging, especially since November when we had the Copenhagen negotiations. There was a well-orchestrated denial campaign that was out, Climate Gate, they were calling it, which turns out to not have any substance to it. But it did sway 20% of Americans. I mean, we had in the so-called polls. And then we had a colder winter in the east and east coast. We had snowstorms, superstorms that, so people look at snow and say, where's global warming? So I think it's a lack of education. I think it's a failure in some ways to the environmental community of not educating people. I mean, I think if we would have worked on this years ago, you wouldn't see the swing in this. But I have to say there's an orchestrated effort orchestrated predominantly by the fossil fuel industries. It amounts to about $100 million a year that's being pumped into this disinformation. And that's very effective to the common person. I've seen this firsthand. I've been up, I mentioned Alaska since 63, the polar regions, and I've seen these changes, especially the acceleration of these changes. But then there's the paradox up here is you're an oil state. I mean, all your public works, everybody gets the check every year. So you don't want the oil spigot to be turned off. But we're not talking about turning off the oil. We're talking about using oil more efficiently.
You describe yourself as an eyewitness to climate change in the far north. Give some examples of what you've seen that has changed between 1986 and the present.
Yes, good question. The ice shelves, Larsen Ice Shelf in Antarctica, it took us 30 days to cross the Larsen A and B. And I mean, if you're dog mushing for 30 days and through storms and clear weather and making camps and day after day after day through an area, and then 10 years later you read in the ninth page of the Minneapolis Tribune, the Larsen B ice shelf just disintegrated, you know, it's powerful. And all the ice shelves I've traveled with on the Arctic regions, the Ward Hunt, the Isles, the Markham, are all gone. Almost every route that I've taken, you can't travel on anymore. You have to accommodate that by adding maybe an extra 30 days or quitting 30 days early in the season. It's dramatically changed the entire regions that I've traveled in.
And so the focus of your Alaska on this visit, is there a political goal associated with this trip?
Yes, there is. I mean, one is I'm curious about, I've never talked about global warming yet in Alaska, and I'm curious just for personally to, where is the state of Alaska? I mean, where are the two sides at? What are the conflicts here? And where is the common ground? That's what I'm curious. So how can this be worked out? Because we need oil. We're not talking about turning on the pipelines. We need natural gas, and then we need more oil right at this point. And you've got plenty of that up here. We need a pipeline to bring that down. But there's political reasons because we need we have a jobs clean energy jobs bill coming up in the Senate. Actually, it's there, I think, this week or next week. And we need the two Alaskan senators on board on this. It's very important.
What do you see, or what do you want to see happen, both in terms of what individuals can do and in U.S. policy? You mentioned this jobs bill.
Well, the way I see it is we clearly have three major problems in the United States globally, too. We have a climate problem that I've just been talking about, but we obviously have an economic recession, a serious recession, because we lost our manufacturing base, and we don't know how this economy is going to grow back. The technological sector has been built up, and that's always going to have some life to it, but it's not going to give us the growth we need to get on our feet again. And we have a huge national security issue because we rely on almost 95% of our oil comes from foreign governments. And we're spending out over $1 billion a day of our hard-earned cash that's going to foreign governments. And a lot of these governments we're nearly at war. And this is serious. The dream I have is energy self-sufficiency for the United States, so that when we turn on a light switch, we're employing our own people rather than supporting somebody in a Persian Gulf. And also, part of this is not just energy and fuels, it's conservation. We're in a recession now, and we're getting a break on oil prices, $3 a gallon. I noticed in Juneau it's pretty cheap, but we know it's going to go up, and we really have to prepare ourselves for that.
Polar explorer Will Steger is in Alaska talking about climate change. Links to more information are at our website, aprn.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Aaron Selbig in Homer, and Tony Gorman in Wrangell. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., Dave Donaldson from Juneau, and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
North Rim Bank, reminding you that you have a second chance to help other Alaskans. If you filed for your PFD online, you can safely donate a portion of your dividend to your favorite Alaska cause. Log into the PFD website and pick, click, give.
The Alaska Children's Trust is dedicated to preventing child abuse and neglect in Alaska. Experts tell us that when you listen, talk, and play with your child, the brain develops more fully. So listen, talk, and play. Three simple steps that add up to a brighter future for your child. The Alaska Children's Trust is committed to Alaska's children. For questions about parenting, call the Alaska Parent Line at 1-800-643-KIDS. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.